Hi, welcome to Big Fat Positive with Shauna and Laura. On this week's episode, we have our weekly check-ins. We have our special segment, Today I Learned, where we talk about practice babies, Play-Doh, embryo adoption, and more. And we wrap it up with our BFPs and BFNs. Let's get started. Hi, welcome to episode 132. Hey, Laura, how you doing?
Hi, Shauna. We're doing pretty well. So my toddler is 23 months and 1 week this week. Okay. And just a really, really quick check-in with him. We're just having sort of normal toddler times, but my big thing this week, I'm just laughing thinking about it because it was such a disaster.
Oh my gosh.
I decided it was time to try to make cookies with my toddler.
Okay, like chocolate chip cookies?
No, I decided, so after last week's crafting fail, of course what I wanted to do was like try my hand at a new craft.
Of course.
Which was, I've never like properly decorated sugar cookies. Like I've been baking forever, right? I've baked plenty of sugar cookies and I've slathered some frosting on them. But like, I've never like done like a really elaborate like royal icing. And I thought that it would be fun to sort of make them with cookie cutters and have him help me with like rolling it out and cutting out the dough. You know, he'd get his own little area and I would do the more intricate ones and we would have a fun bonding moment with mother and child.
Yes. Oh, that sounds lovely. And nothing says toddler activity more than elaborate and intricate.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, to be fair, I knew that his part of it was not going to be elaborate and intricate. But I was half of them will be a mess and half of them I'll save for myself to like decorate separately. Mm-hmm. Right. So I, taking a cue from you, instead of like buying cookie cutters and stuff, I asked my Buy Nothing group if anyone had stuff I could borrow for decorating cookies. And they did. Someone responded right away and another local mom, and I went and picked them up, and she had like amazing cookie cutters, super fun. And I made the dough ahead of time. And then after my guy's nap, I was like, "Ooh, do you want to make cookies?" And he was like, "Cookies, yes." So we, you know, he knows what the word cookie means. Mm-hmm. And so I start to roll it out and he wants to help. So I give him a little section and I help him, helping him roll it out. And at first it was cute. Like he liked grabbing the rolling pin and was kind of like helping me do it. And together we kind of pushed, you know, I helped him place the cookie cutters and push down on it. That all was fine. And then, you know, when you're done with cutting out cookies, you end up with all the scraps that you have to then like gather up and then re-roll out.
Yes. Oh, gather up and roll out.
Yes. Well, so I gathered up the scraps from his little section and it ended up being about a baseball size, you know, maybe a little smaller ball of dough, which he immediately put in his mouth. So I was like, well, okay, that's done. And so I was like, you know what? Even though I'm super paranoid about salmonella and like I really wanted to eat the cookie dough. Don't get me wrong. But like these days I'm pregnant. I'm not going to I didn't want to do that. I'm avoiding freaking runny eggs. Like I'm not going to eat raw cookie dough. But I was like, you know, I survived my life having a little bit of cookie dough. Like, and so I gave him a little bit to eat and he liked it, of course, like little tiny little pinches. Right.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to go overboard. But then he like grabs this big old glob of dough that's like the size of like half of his head and he tries to eat it. And so I take it from him and I'm like, hey, love bug, you got a bite of that. That's enough. We aren't really supposed to eat cookie dough. Do the whole, you know, the whole respectful parenting thing. Did not work.
Oh, no.
He melted down almost like one of the worst meltdowns I've ever seen from him. Mm-hmm. He was in his learning tower and I took the dough and it already had slobber all over it. I just like threw it straight in the trash, you know, because no one's going to eat those. That would be terrible. And he starts like screaming and like it was like at first it was like a whine, but then very quickly it turned into like, you just killed my puppy. Like massive tears running down his cheeks, like doubled over with like just intense emotional pain. And I felt so bad.
Yeah.
I was just like, you know, trying to do the thing where you're like, oh, you're really sad that you can't eat that dough. But it was like, it wasn't letting up. So I finally texted Corey. I was like, I need you. Corey came in from the back office and he's like, what's going on, baby bear? And he was just like, sobbing. He was, you know, Corey looks at me like, what did you do? Like, did he get cut by the cookie cutter or something? Mm-hmm. No, it was just, I wouldn't let him eat a baseball sized glob of cookie dough.
How dare you? My favorite thing about doing the wry parenting in those moments, well, maybe not my favorite thing, but one thing that always amuses me is the, I know you're really upset about not getting to eat a gigantic head size glob of cookie, like whatever it is they're upset about. It's just like you're saying it out loud and inside I'm just like trying to contain my laughter. I was like, oh my God, you're so funny. You're breaking down over this.
I know.
But I keep it cool.
Mm-hmm. There was something months ago, maybe I talked about it. One of his earliest tantrums was meltdowns, I should say, different than a tantrum, I think. He wanted to grab a train, like a picture of a train in a book. Like, he had the book open and it was like, you know, pictures, like photos of a train. And he goes, grab it, grab it, grab it. And he's like literally his hands trying to grab it. And I said, oh, honey, I know you want to grab it. It's a picture, so you can't take it out of the book. And he just like lost it. And I was doing the same thing. Oh, you're really sad. You can't pick up that train out of that book, you know?
Poor thing. Oh, but they move on. They get over it, as I'm sure he got over the cookie incident.
Yeah, well, he got over the cookies when the cookies were baked and I was able to give him some. So
yes, that'll do the trick. That'll do the trick
every time. Yeah. So that's the toddler land. The pregnancy doesn't have a lot of updates either because I'm between doctor's appointments. I'm going every 2 weeks now. So I went last week and I'm going to be going next week. But after last week's massive pain problem, this week is like I'm floating on air. I mean, I don't know.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just that I'm, you know, like I saw the other side and now it's like nothing can harm me. But like, I think it's the combination of the baby having moved off of whatever nerve he was, you know, impinging. Uh-huh. And my new bed. Like, I'm convinced my new bed is helping.
Oh, good.
So my new bed is softer. And I've realized that I think that part of my SPD pain in both pregnancies was that, like, you know, you gain weight, you're lying on your side, and it, you know, causes just more pressure. And my mattress was, like, too firm. My old mattress, it was so freaking firm.
Oh, that'll do it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it was, like, making more compression than it needed. So I'm just, like, so happy with being able to move this week. I'm trying to remind myself that it doesn't mean I can like go do all the things, you know. That's my hardest thing is like whenever I start feeling better, I'm just like, let's go on a hike, you know. Like,
yeah push it to the limit, baby.
But I'm really grateful for that. And good. Yeah, just lots of movement. I'm starting to feel hiccups.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, I think I had started feeling them before, but I like hadn't registered what they were. But I was like, why is the baby like tapping? I was like, oh, it's not tapping. It's hiccups, like the little tiny rhythmic movements. So,
yeah, sometimes that would really drive me nuts when I was trying to fall asleep at night, which is always when they would kick in. And I'd be like, oh, my God, stop. The repetitive motion would really get to me. But then at other times it would be so cute. And it's one thing I kind of miss.
Yeah, it's funny you should say that because the only other thing I have left on my notes is that, as I said, lots of movement and hiccups, making it harder to sleep at night.
Okay. So it's more universal than I was thinking.
Well, yeah, I just, you know, sometimes it's like, oh, it's not that big of a deal. But you know what I find it's really annoying? And it's not so much the hiccups as the big movements is when I get up in the middle of the night to pee. There's just like, I don't know if it's just because I've gotten up and like there's now like there was movement when there wasn't movement or whatever, or if it's because like my bladder is empty and there's suddenly more room to move around. But I get back to bed, it's like 4 a.m. or something, right? Get back to bed and suddenly the fetus is just like, time to pate. And he's like kicking and I don't have the anterior placenta this time to pat it. So it's just like, I look down and sometimes it's just like, how is my body not going to like split apart? Like he moves big movements and it's crazy. So yeah.
That's hard when you're trying to get back to sleep in the middle of the night.
With Elle, did you have an anterior placenta? Do you know?
I don't know. No one ever mentioned it, so I don't think I did.
Yeah, that's. I feel like that's what it, if they don't mention it, it usually means that you don't have one. Mm-hmm. So did you think that there was more movement with Elle, or did you not notice a difference?
I didn't notice because probably I just didn't know any different the first time around and didn't make much of it, you know? Yeah. And so the second time around, just it was hard to compare.
Yeah. Also, I feel like movements are such like, well, I mean, people say that movements are so much more pronounced in the second pregnancy anyway. So who knows? Yeah. Maybe you kind of got an even playing field for that reason when you had the anterior with Cece.
Yeah, I think that probably makes sense.
Yeah. But anyway, that is what's been going on with me this week. I want to hear what's going on with you, Shauna. What's new with you and how old is that toddler? Oh, wait. I know how old that toddler is.
How old?
2 years old.
Two. She's two.
Oh.
Wow. Yep. She turned two and we had a family celebration all day.
Aww.
I stayed up the night before and put together decorations so that when she came out in the morning, it would be just a fun, stunning surprise. Even though she's two, I wanted it to feel out of the ordinary and special. So I made that. I made this big rainbow balloon arch and Steve helped me with that, and we just decorated with streamers and signs, etc., as you do on a birthday. And when she came out the next morning, it was just made it all worth it. She was just like, oh, and really surprised and starts running around and, you know, the little glee dance that toddlers do, running in circles, tapping their feet. And
yeah.
Just really excited, and it was fun. It was just a really fun day.
I feel like last year, when they turn one, it's sort of like, do they know anything special? Like, they're just so little. At the time, you think, oh my God, they're so big, but they're really still babies, you know? And they're still, like, freaked out about new things sometimes, and you never know how it's going to go. But I can tell that, like, two is really where they can register, like, oh, things are out of the ordinary. This is, like, new in my environment. Like, this is fun. Balloons, you know? Like, balloons, cool, you know?
Balloons. I mean, that's a big thing. And streamers, I made, like, a door streamer so that she could run through it, you know, when she came into the living room to see everything. And, oh, she just ran back and forth and back and forth through that thing. And she did. She knew something was special. It overwhelmed her at times, especially as the day wore on. I think, you know, we did a Zoom call with you and some other friends and family when we sang her happy birthday. And it was fun and it was really good. But I think she was a little bit kind of at her max at that point. She had woken up from her nap, just very upset, as she often does. And she did have some meltdowns that day.
Well, it's just a lot for them to process, you know? And I feel like it's good to remember that meltdowns are like their way of expressing their emotions. Like, they don't have the language or the, you know, friends they can text to be like, oh, I'm having such a shitty day, or oh, I'm just like, I'm so excited, I don't know what to do about it, you know?
They
have kind of one way, and it's to like let it all out in a big stream of like,
I just came out from the bathroom at one point, and she was in this little hallway just on the floor, just kicking and screaming. I was like, what happened? No one knew what happened. And I think she just went behind this wall. We have a little hallway. I think she just like went behind there to be alone and let it all out.
Oh, I mean, that's so healthy, though, in a way, you know?
Yes. I agree. And after that, you know, she was jolly and she got some presents. I will say Steve and I didn't get her any presents. It just, I don't know, like we did so much to celebrate for the day and we kind of forgot. And like the night before, I was like, oh my God, we didn't get her a present. And Steve's like, she's two. She's getting a lot of stuff from Nana and Pop-Pop and Grandma's getting her stuff. And so she opened your present on her birthday, which was so cute. Some gold sparkly shoes and the Thermos Funtainer water bottle, which I think was her favorite item of the day.
That was my BFP a couple weeks ago, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, those, I mean, you know, I was like, is this super boring to send thermos for a birthday. But yeah, I know how my guy like is obsessed with it. So I knew she went. I picked Paw Patrol because I knew you guys were big on Paw Patrol.
Yep, over there. She knows Paw Patrol and she just loved clicking it open and drinking out of it. And she got a bunch of Magna Tiles from Grandma because I've mentioned before she really likes building.
Yeah.
And all in all, it was just a really nice day. And now I have a 2-year-old.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so close behind you on that one. But it's so funny thinking back to when they were first born, how like the 3.5 weeks or whatever it was that they're different, their age difference. It seems so big when they're just tiny, tiny. Mm-hmm. And now it's just like, whoosh, it's the same.
It just like, really feels like they're the same age.
Although I still see like when we talk on the podcast and like compare notes, like I still see him like a month behind her in certain things, like the sleep regressions and stuff. It's so interesting that that still happens like that.
Yeah, that is. I'm sure that's all going to start evening out really soon, though.
It has to. Yeah. I mean, the 3 weeks, I don't think it can make that much of a difference for that much longer.
No, I don't think so. But speaking of 2 years, we went to her 2-year checkup.
Oh.
And that was a big deal because we went to a new pediatrician that we've never been to before. Yeah, we've had the same pediatrician since Elle was born and we really love him. He's just friendly, outgoing, laid back. Tells it how it is. And we just love him. But now that we've moved from that neighborhood, it's so far to get there. You know, if they're sick, it's really hard because you have to drive all that way with a sick kid in the car.
So you were going all the way down to like the valley. Well, I mean, the valley is a very vague thing, but like your old neighborhood down in like kind of by Studio City area, right?
Yeah. And so for us, that was about a 25-minute drive in good traffic, you know. So with a sick kid, I was just like, I don't know. I think we should try to find someone up here for when they are sick. We'll have a relationship with a doctor. So this is a good time to do it. And
yeah, definitely.
Yeah. We decided to go to the UCLA health system up here and picked a new doctor just randomly. And she was very nice, but just such the opposite of our old pediatrician. You know, she's more reserved. Kind of shy, soft-spoken. But I do think that was really good because Cece wasn't nervous around her at all.
That's interesting.
Yeah, she's usually pretty nervous around new people. She can get kind of shy. But this didn't bother her at all. Maybe because it was such a fun event for her to get the hell out of the house.
Yeah.
Because we never go anywhere. You know, it's COVID times and she had her own special mask. And I was very proud of her. She kept her mask on the entire time. Did really well with that.
Good job.
Yeah. But a couple things, you know, the reason I really wanted to go to this 2-year checkup, I was like, oh, she's got to stay up to date on her vaccinations. Right? Like, we got to go to that appointment. And Steve was a little bit hesitant, you know, with the pandemic, etc. Should you really go? And I was like, we got to go. We go. And she's not due for any vaccinations at 2 years.
I was wondering about that. I couldn't remember if that was a thing, if they needed more at 2.
They don't. As long as they're caught up from what they were supposed to have at 18 months, they're fine.
Wow. All right.
Yeah. But one funny, cute thing they do at this appointment that I remember with Al is they give them a vision test, which I don't know if they've done that before, but I'm like, how the hell are you going to give a kid, like a little kid, a vision test?
We haven't had a vision test.
Oh, you haven't? Okay.
No.
So they have this device, which almost looks like a camera or I don't even know. It has like a big like lens thing on it. And they just point it at the kid's eyes from about a foot away and it's blink some blinky lights and they just look into it and then they're like, oh, yep, her eyesight's fine. I'm like, how did you figure that out based on that little device?
Well, that's what happened when I go to the optometrist, and when I went to this new optometrist a couple years ago, I was like ready to do the like read the smallest line thing. And, you know, they do that. But they also were like, okay, we're going to sit you at this machine and it's going to figure out your prescription. I was like, what? And I sat down to the machine and they were just like, zip, zip, zip. Okay, this is your prescription. We'll verify it with the like normal, you know, the old fashioned stuff. But it was totally accurate. And I'm just like, well, that's convenient.
That's very convenient.
Technology.
Imagine that. Well, that's really cool. So she has good eyesight.
Well, that's good about the eyesight. I mean, that's a relief. Like, because it's so hard to know with toddlers. And it's not like you're going to be able to ask them what the letters on the bottom line are necessarily.
No, you can't.
So what else happens at that 2-year appointment?
Well, they do an autism screening, which I didn't realize. It's a questionnaire, and it's a lot of questions like, does your child make eye contact with you? Does your child laugh? And there were some that I had to check no, so I was kind of like, ooh, I don't know, you know. But it mostly was like language development related. Mm-hmm. I've talked before about how I'm sometimes concerned that Cece's a little bit behind with her language.
Yeah.
She puts a couple words together, but, you know, not as often as I wonder if she should.
Yeah.
So the doctor didn't mention any problems with that questionnaire or anything. But I wanted to ask her about the vocabulary. I'm like, you know, I feel like she's having a hard time enunciating words. I don't understand a ton of what she said. And the doctor's like, okay, does she have an older sibling? I'm like, yes, she does. And she's like, well, what I find with the second kid is a lot of times the older child does most of the talking for the younger child. And I was like,
gee, does that sound like L?
Yes. I was like, well, that's interesting because I have an extremely chatty, very outgoing, energetic 4-year-old at home too. And she's like, yeah, this happens a lot. You know, it's like the older kid asks for a snack and then, oh, it just suddenly appears for the little kid. Some juice, water, milk. And then, oh, it also appears. So they don't really get that practice asking for what they need. And so she reassured me. She's like, I really don't think there's any problems with this. Let's just keep an eye on it. And if by the 2.5-year appointment, you still have concerns about it, we can talk about it more.
Oh, well, that's good to hear. I'm sure. I feel like any of those questionnaires or those milestones checklists like you've talked about that you found on the internet, they can cause so much anxiety, you know?
Yes. And
especially, I don't know, we have the same personality type when it comes to like grades and passing tests and getting gold stars.
Oh,
and it triggers that in me. Like, oh, we got to have everything. Everything's got to be A+, you know?
Yeah.
So it's good to hear that that's sort of that your doctor is not at all concerned about it.
Yeah, that was a huge relief.
So, yeah, it sounds like she's on track and healthy and didn't need any shots, which is good.
Yeah, it was overall a great appointment. Her teeth look great. She is referring us to an allergist because of the dairy issues and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
She wants to get a little bit more testing and information on that. And that was it. Overall, it was great. And Cece did great. And it was nice for us to get out of the house and see and talk to a different person.
So novel these days.
It really is. But anyway, should we take a break and move on to our special segment?
I think we should.
Laura, we recently had our moms on the show, and it was so fun hearing their stories from the past.
I loved hearing what they had to share about their experiences being pregnant and having young kids. But you know, they have so many more amazing memories and stories to share.
Yes, and that's why Storyworth is such a wonderful gift for the mother figure in your life. It's a way to capture those stories and memories for years to come.
And what better time to give Storyworth than for Mother's Day, which is right around the corner. Right now, our listeners can save $10 off your first purchase by going to storyworth.com/BFP.
Here's how it works. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick, such as, what is your favorite memory of your parents?
All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. Long or short, it doesn't matter.
You'll be emailed a copy of your loved one's response as they're submitted over the course of the year. You'll get to enjoy their retelling of the stories you already know or be surprised by stories you've never heard before.
After that year of fun, Storyworth compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book that you'll be able to share and revisit for generations to come.
I gifted Storyworth to my mom a couple years ago, and her hardcover book is a special memento on my bookshelf that my girls and I love to look through.
My mom did one too and included lots of pictures from her childhood, which Sebastian and Augie love looking at.
Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years. Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/BFP.
That's storyworth.com/BFP to save $10 on your first purchase. There's nothing like the feeling of being confident in your own skin. No complicated routine, no multiple step protocols, just simple, scientifically validated solutions.
Absolutely. That's why we have to tell you about today's sponsor, OneSkin. Their products make it easy to keep your skin healthy while looking and feeling your best.
The secret to OneSkin's success is their proprietary OS1 peptide, which switches off the aging cells and has been clinically proven to strengthen the skin barrier and improve skin health markers.
For a limited time, our listeners will get an exclusive 15% off OneSkin products using the code BFP when you check out at OneSkin.co.
One of my favorite things about OneSkin products is how easy they are to use. I swear, I've seen skin routines with like 20 steps, but not OneSkin. Just cleanse, pat your skin dry, and apply twice daily.
We aren't the only ones who love OneSkin. OneSkin has over 4,000 five-star reviews, and were recognized by Fast Company as one of the most innovative brands in 2024.
OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer.
My skin tends to get really irritated this time of year, but since using the OneSkin face supplement every day, my skin feels calm and healthy. I've also been using the eye topical supplement, which I really feel brightens up my face.
Get started today with 15% off using code BFP at oneskin.co.
That's 15% off oneskin.co with code BFP. After your purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you.
Okay, I will be the first to admit that I don't always prioritize my own wellness. With kids and work, it never feels easy to fit in taking care of myself. But with Allo Moves, I find it easier than ever to do so.
Same. With the Allo Moves app, everything I need is in one place. Yoga, Pilates, fitness classes, mindfulness, and so much more.
If you're curious what Allo Moves has to offer, visit allomoves.com and use code BFP for an exclusive 30-day free trial and 20% off an annual membership.
I love that I can easily find a class that's perfectly suited to my interests and ability level. They offer classes from beginner to advanced, and all classes are on demand, so you can fit them into your busy schedule.
They have high-intensity classes if you're looking to get in a good sweat, and low-key mindfulness classes if you're looking to get centered. They even offer help with sleep, which we all know is crucial for moms.
Ever since I watched The Art of Sleep on Allo Moves, I've been falling asleep faster and staying asleep longer.
One thing I really like about Allo Moves is that they create themed playlists, so it's easy to find content on the areas you're interested in. One of my favorite playlists right now is called Meditation for Productivity.
Ooh, I love the sound of that one. Unlock your personal wellness routine with Allo Moves. Go to allomoves.com now and use code BFP for an exclusive 30-day free trial and enjoy 20% off an annual membership.
That's allomoves.com, code BFP. allomoves.com, code BFP. And we are back. So our special segment this week is Today I Learned, where we discuss all the cool, interesting, or weird facts that we've learned recently around pregnancy, parenting, or just babies in general. Shauna, you want to hit me with your first Today I Learned?
Today I learned what goes on during a C-section.
Oh,
finally, after all these years. Now, you know, Laura, I am very blood and icky stuff averse. So I always refused to watch videos on what happens down there. It was like a complete, I will ignore the fact of, I know they're cutting me open and taking out a baby and that's it. Thank the Lord, a mom who is a doctor in San Francisco recently made a Play-Doh reenactment of what happens during a C-section.
Whoa, with Play-Doh? Like,
yes. Like, this is it
super detailed? Like, how, I don't know, I can't even imagine. Like, how does this work?
Yes, it's the most detailed Play-Doh work I have ever seen.
Wait, you've never seen my toddler smash together five colors and then try to eat it. So,
oh, yeah, that might outdo this. I got to see it in person. No, so she has a four-year-old herself, and I guess she does a lot of these surgical reenactments on her YouTube page. Like, she also has a tonsillectomy and like a cleft palate surgery, repair surgery. And so this one, it's like, it starts with like a stomach, like a Play-Doh tummy with a belly button. She helps her son like slice into the first layer. And she's got all these different layers of what's going on inside your abdomen when you have a C-section. So I'm like, what's next? I don't know. And so they cut open the tummy. Oh, before they do that, they check that the anesthesia worked. It's like, I didn't really realize that. I was in just a daze, right, when this was all going down for me.
For both times or just the first time?
The first time. Second time, this must have been a minor thing. I don't even remember it.
Because I remember my doctor being like, can you feel that? And I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, I really hope the answer is going to be no for this. And I was like, nope, can't feel a thing.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't think I knew where they were poking because uh-huh. If I didn't feel it, I didn't know where. So apparently they're poking your stomach where they're about to cut in. So that's a good thing. That's mm-hmm. what I learned on this video. So then they cut you open. They cut through the skin and the fat. And then the first layer under that is the fascia. And instead of like a scalpel, look, I don't know how specific this is. If someone out there is an OB, you know what's up and you can correct me if I'm wrong. But this four-year-old, he took a pair of scissors and cut through the fascia, which was kind of like stringy little, I don't know, grains of... What is fascia, Laura?
My understanding of fascia is that it's like intermediate tissue. Like, it's not the muscle, it's not the
before
fat.
The muscle.
Yeah. It kind mm-hmm. of envelops the muscles or like different organ areas. Mm-hmm. Shall we look that up? Make sure that's right.
Yeah.
Okay. What is fascia? Let's see how well I did. Okay. There you go. Fascia is a thin casing of connective tissue. So it is connective tissue that surrounds and holds every organ, blood vessel, nerve fiber, and muscle in place.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I can see that within this Play-Doh demonstration. So he snips out with scissors. And then what's next is the rectus muscle. And this I really didn't know. Like, I just thought they did like a deep slice through everything and then took the baby out. I know that is completely ignorant, but I have to tell you, I ignore medical stuff like nobody's business.
You actively ignore it.
Oh, I do. I'm an ostrich with my head in the sand with this stuff because it's too icky for me personally. But no, they put their hands in and actually separate the muscle. You probably knew that, didn't you?
I did. I don't know. You know me. I have my doctor parents, and I'm like on the other end of the spectrum from you mm-hmm. with all this blood and surgery stuff. Like, I used to love watching those like real surgery shows on Discovery Channel, stuff like that. I guess in theory I still would. Are they even on anymore? Who has time?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
And I'm the one who wanted my C-section filmed and was kind of disappointed when it was like blown out by the surgical lights and I couldn't see all the details.
Oh, so. That's so true. Well, if it happens the second time around, you'll get your video opportunity.
We'll see.
We'll see. So then the next part, this is something I really didn't know. They take something called a bladder blade and they like hook it onto the bottom part of the rectus muscle and it like displaces the bladder and protects it, I guess, from being accidentally cut when they continue cutting. I was like, oh, that's a good idea. Kind of just move that organ out of the way.
It's like they thought of everything.
They thought of everything. What? Oh, my God. Doctors, they're so smart. So the next thing is the uterus is revealed and he cuts into that. And the little boy is so cute, right? Because the next thing you see is an amniotic sac. Like the mom put, I don't know, some like little thin layer of plastic and filled it with liquid so he can see that. And he's like, that looks wet. And it's just like, yep, that's the amniotic sac with the fluid. And he cuts into that. And then the baby. And in the video, the baby is a little Spider-Man stuffed animal. He's like, oh my God, it's so cute. He's delivering this thing. And this part I did know, a placenta is, delivered after the baby. And I don't know. It was just a fun, easy way for my 42-year-old self to learn about what happened with my body. So all you got to do is educate me with Play-Doh and I'm like all set.
Just talk to you like you're a four-year-old, right?
Exactly.
Well, I'm going to have to look this up. It sounds very cute and actually right up my alley. So
Yeah. It might not be bloody enough for you, Laura. I don't know.
I don't need the blood. I like the information. I just don't mind the blood.
Oh, I see.
That's the difference. Yeah.
All right. What do you have for us?
Okay. So today I learned about an outdated piece of college curriculum called Practice Babies. Have you heard about this?
No. What is this?
Oh, my God. Okay. So from 1919 to as late as 1969, American colleges had home ec departments that had a special program called Practice Babies, where they would get babies loaned out from orphanages.
Oh my God, this is a terrible idea.
For women to figure out how to be mothers. I was like, this can't be true. This has to be fake. Nope, 100% true. Went on like about 50 years. Apparently there were like 40 or 50 colleges that did this.
Uh-huh.
And it was just like super common practice. Mm-hmm. And like for one example, was at Cornell University. There was like, they had a practice baby program. And what they would do is like, it was either you would get the baby for like 10 days, or it was like there was a rigid schedule where like one quote unquote mother would put the baby down for the nap. And like another quote unquote mother would like be there when the baby woke up.
Uh-huh. Where? In a classroom or at home?
They would have like practice homes and apartments.
Oh my word.
Yeah. And then they would name these orphans like after the school or like the program. So like at Cornell, they all had the last name Domicon for domestic economics.
Okay.
And like in some other university in Illinois, they were named like either North or South, depending on what building they were being housed in. And it's just super weird. There are all these pictures of like these, you know, sweet looking ladies who were like juniors or seniors majoring in home economics, trying to take care of these babies. And it's really interesting because I guess there were actually some benefits to being one of these practice babies because.
Yeah, I was going to say, what are the long-term effects of this?
Well, no one actually knows because what would happen is the babies after a period of time, I don't know how long, like a year, would be returned back to the orphanages and then adopted out. And adoptions at the time were anonymous, like 100% anonymous. So people weren't followed up with. There were no long-term studies. There were some individuals who found out that they were practice babies. And there's like mixed reactions. Like there was one woman who said that she like had no attachment. Like they didn't know about attachment theory at the time, right? So they probably just thought it was better for the babies to have a nice home environment, even if it's a lab, right? Than living in the orphanages, which I'm sure were not great places. But there was, you know, this one Bobby Domicon from Cornell that they have like these pictures of. He was born at 8 pounds and at 2 months, he was 6 pounds because he was like so malnourished. And then they brought him into this program and they have pictures of him at like 10 months and 14 months or something. And he's like progressed really well. He's like fat and happy and doing all of his motor milestones. So it was kind of a mixed bag, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
It does sound like a terrible idea, but also orphanages were bad.
Yeah. Speaking of the orphanages, were they like going home to the orphanage at night after their long day of classes or did they like stay at these places?
No, they stayed at these programs for like a duration. I don't know if it was months. I mean, it looked like with this Bobby Domicon, it was like a year. So, yeah. It's so weird.
It's like living at daycare for just overnight. Again and again for a year.
I mean, I don't think this is something that we should obviously reinstate, you know.
No.
It's definitely not a good idea now that we know more than we did in 1919. But yeah, it's so interesting.
I also wonder if it actually helped any of these women become better mothers if and when they became mothers.
Yeah. There were no reports of that either. I mean, I guess a little practice never hurt, but it's not really the same to have a baby for 10 days.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, it just blows my mind. Yeah, so that is something I've learned recently.
Me too. I just learned it and it is very interesting.
There's an NPR article about this. If you look up practice babies in NPR, you'll be able to find
it. Okay.
We'll link it in the show notes too.
Yeah.
Okay, Shauna, do you have another one for us?
I do. Today I learned that delivery room decor is a thing. Like hospital delivery and recovery room decor. Did you know this?
I did not, because I did not know that was an option.
I didn't it didn't even cross my mind.
Do you bring like the Property Brothers in ahead of time and get them to put up some, or Joanna Gaines, she can put up some shiplap?
Yeah, just shiplap those walls. Yeah, Joanna Gaines is your person. Okay. No, just bringing in, I mean, I'm assume the mom or the mom-to-be isn't doing this. Someone in their life is coming in and completely just decking out these rooms. Like if you look up decorating hospital delivery rooms, you'll see pictures of a lot of these that are showing up are I guess, for baby girls because it's mostly in pink, but just like gigantic balloon arches, those kind of lantern lights, you know, all over the room.
Yeah, were they like storm lanterns, those kind of things?
Are they storm lanterns? I don't know what they're called. Like paper lanterns, like the kind you would get at IKEA, you know.
Oh, but there's paper lanterns. Got it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And pink and white and just their own lamps, like a little bedside lamp, tables decorated with tea and stuff. It's kind of like wish I had known about this because, you know me, I like to decorate and I like to go all out.
So I'm fully on board with bringing your own lamp. That was an idea you had that I did when I had my toddler.
Did I bring I brought a nightlight. Yeah.
Oh, you brought a nightlight? I thought you had said to bring a lamp. So I actually brought like a lamp, like a little, it was like an IKEA one, but I put off a soft light and that really saved us. So I'm definitely... I don't know if I'm going to bring a full-fledged lamp this time, but I do think I'm going bring like a little, actually that little egg light that I got for breastfeeding so that I can have like a nice soft light because, man, those hospital lights suck. But Shauna, you would not have been in the mental space to do this. Well, not with your first.
Not at the moment, but imagine this. Imagine you this. A couple weeks before, I had known about this. A couple weeks before delivery, I had known that this was a thing. Don't you think I'd be on Amazon ordering all this stuff? Like, oh my God, it would make everything so much more cozy and I could have Steve set it. I don't know. I think it would be kind of nice.
I could see that being kind of nice. I definitely think in the recovery room, it'd be nice to have a few touches of home. Mm-hmm. However, I also remember that time as just being like a complete blur and like wondering if it might be completely lost on me. But then again, I'm not as into the home decor as you are. Like,
I love
watching HGTV though. So I would love if someone else did this for me.
Yes. I mean, they're not painting walls or doing any wall demo or anything like that. It's just like very matchy-matchy, color coordinated. I mean, this is what I'm seeing, right? Pictures of. I'm sure people do their own personal touches and people listening could do their own personal touches however they want. But I did want to mention that if anyone listening wants to have custom-made delivery and recovery room decor, you've got to go to Ruffles and Buttons. It's a store on Etsy. Let me tell you, this stuff is magnificently over the top, if I do say so myself. Absolute matchy-matchy, like things are satin. There's like a satin robe that the mom wears, which matches this whole getup that you can put on the baby and the sheets and just rugs and all kinds of stuff.
Rugs. I feel like the nurses would be mad about a rug.
Probably. I feel like the nurses would be mad about all of this.
Yeah. The nurses are going to be like, come on, guys. It depends on the nurse, I guess.
Yeah.
I feel like it kind of, every shift change, it would be a different reaction.
Probably. I bet some would get a kick out of it. You know, it's like something different to look at. Yeah. But this one, if you want, I mean, this is $730.
What?
You can really sink some money into this. Yeah, custom made. It's got the baby's name on it. Like every little thing you could imagine to go together.
Wow. And,
yes.
Do you think you could use your health savings account money for that?
Yeah, I think they would consider that a medical necessity. Bolstering mental health. There you go. That's what
there
it's
you
for.
Go. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to have to take a look and see if anything strikes my fancy for my upcoming birth.
Yes. Yes. Please do. And let me know and take lots of pictures. You can Instagram them for sure.
It's worth it just for the Instagram likes, probably.
All right. So that's what I learned. What do you have for us?
Okay. I learned that recently a baby was born that broke a record. Shauna, this baby was born 27 years after her embryo was frozen.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Whoa.
27 years. So this was in Knoxville, Tennessee. Her parents were having fertility problems. Apparently the father had cystic fibrosis, which can cause fertility problems. And they were starting to look into traditional adoption when they heard about embryo adoption. And so 3 years ago, they had a baby via embryo adoption that was the first record breaker. Mm-hmm. They had a little girl named Emma, who actually had been frozen for 24 years.
Wow.
And now they've broken another record because they wanted to give Emma a sibling, and they've discovered that Emma had two full sibling embryos on ice still. Mm-hmm. So they transferred this embryo that was frozen for 27 years and 4 months in October 1992.
Oh, my God. So is she considered 27 years old or how does that work?
Well, here's the thing. She was frozen in October 1992. Her mom was born April 1991. So they could have been...
The baby's mom?
Yeah. So, okay. So the mom who gave birth to this previously frozen embryo...
Oh, the mom who adopted the embryo.
Mom who adopted the embryo was only 18 months older, you know, in chronological age, I guess, depending on how you look at it. So they could have been, you know, classmates or...
Wow. You know,
they could have been play friends or whatever, but instead now she has her two little baby girls who are full genetic siblings.
Uh-huh.
It's wild.
That's crazy. Science is unbelievably incredible. Oh my goodness.
And, you know, they're obviously just so grateful because they thought they weren't going to be able to be pregnant. And apparently embryo adoption is one of the cheapest ways to have a baby if you're having serious fertility problems and can't just, you know, can't do IVF on your own. It's a lot cheaper than traditional IVF because you don't have to go through the IVF cycle yourself.
Yeah. You just have to prepare your body for the transfer, which does include some injections and stuff, but, you know, nothing like the egg harvesting and, stuff like that.
Yeah. So, but you know, the parents didn't actually know that these embryos were so old until the day of the transfer, apparently, for the first one.
You would think they would disclose that information to the parents. I wonder why they didn't know.
Yeah, I was wondering that too, because she said she was like lying on the table waiting for the transfer. And the doctor was like, oh, this might be a world record. They had picked, I guess, the embryos, like, based on the profiles that had been left.
Okay,
They said they specifically wanted, like, short parents because they were short and stuff like that.
That's cute. Okay.
So, but you'd think they would tell you that because I would be concerned that there would be some kind of, you know, that the embryos might have some problems with degrading after all those years. The article I read about it in the New York Post, did interview a doctor and said, you know, we just don't know. Like, I guess we'll have to see because this is now the oldest transfer. So we'll have to see if anything happens. But, you know, as of right now, they're totally healthy, normal sisters.
That's great. That's amazing. And that's super cool.
Yeah. So I thought that was really interesting. Mm-hmm. And that is what I learned today.
Very cool. Should we take a break and come back with our BFPs and BFNs?
I think we should.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Shauna, think of all the relationships you have in your life. From parents, siblings, your friends, kids, coworkers, even neighbors, there's a lot of human interaction, which we know doesn't always go perfectly.
Oh, you know I don't have a perfect relationship with my next door neighbor, and I can't change her, but I can work on my own reactions to her and how she treats my family.
Absolutely. Strengthening your own coping skills and setting healthy boundaries in any relationship are important, and therapy can be a great place to work on these types of things.
Not only that, therapy can help you handle stress, deal with burnout, and empower you to be the best version of yourself. Not only that, therapy can help you handle stress, deal with burnout, and empower you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma, although of course it is helpful in those situations too.
I've noticed that doing weekly therapy helps me handle the things that cause overwhelm in my life, like constantly balancing kids, work, and self-care.
I love that therapy helps me have insights about myself that I might not have otherwise. It's always great to get an objective take on what I'm going through.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Become your own soulmate, whether you're looking for one or not. Visit BetterHelp.com/BFP today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/BFP. Hey, listeners. This episode is proudly brought to you by LolaVie, an award-winning hair care line founded by the fabulous Jennifer Aniston. You know, hair so iconic, it needs no introduction.
Okay, imagine this. Jen got tired of the same old struggle we all face, choosing between hair products that work and ones that are actually good for us. With LolaVie, that dilemma is history.
We all put our hair through the wringer. Coloring, heat styling, stress, the list goes on. Over time, it takes a toll. That's why it's crucial to have products that not only repair the look of the damage, but also shield your locks from future harm.
Enter LolaVie's bestsellers, the cult classic Glossing Detangler and Perfecting Leave-In Conditioner. These aren't just styling products, they're your hair's new best friends.
And here's a treat for you listeners. For a limited time, you get an exclusive 15% off your entire order at LolaVie.com. Just use code BFP at checkout. I have been using the Glossing Detangler and Leave-In Conditioner, and I love them. I love how soft and healthy my hair feels after using them.
I love their restorative shampoo and conditioner plus intensive repair treatment. They smell so good, make my shower feel like a spa, and never leave my hair looking or feeling dry.
LolaVie's products are naturally derived in plant-based goodness. No silicone, sulfates, parabens, or gluten, and of course, cruelty-free and vegan.
Unlock Jennifer Aniston-approved hair at LolaVie.com. As our loyal listeners, you'll get an exclusive 15% off your entire order when you use code BFP at checkout.
That's 15% off your order at LolaVie.com with promo code BFP. Please note, you can only use one promo code per order and discounts can't be combined.
After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them that we sent you.
And we're back. And Laura, you are up first with our BFPs and BFNs this week. What do you got for us?
I have a BFP.
Okay.
So my BFP is this Atlantic article I read recently, and it was titled, Mr. Rogers Had a Simple Set of Rules for Talking to Children. Did you see this?
I don't think I did, but I'm familiar kind of with his rules. So tell me more.
So I guess the article is written by this guy, Maxwell King, who is writing a book about Mr. Rogers. But this article is all about how on the show on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, they joked about how there was like a very specific way that Mr. Rogers like made sure that they talked on the show because he knew that kids took things and language very literally.
Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just how he spoke to children, but he had rules about how the other adults on the show should talk to children.
Yes. And so the writers started calling it Fredish, which I thought was pretty because he's, you know, Fred Rogers.
Okay.
They said it was a distinct language called Fredish. Mm-hmm. And so here's an example. Here's a quote from the article. It says, fundamentally, Fredish anticipated the ways its listeners might misinterpret what was being said. For instance, in a scene in a hospital where a nurse was inflating a blood pressure cuff, the script originally said, I'm going to blow this up. But then this guy recalls, one of the writers recall, Fred made us redub the line saying, I'm going to puff this up with some air because blow it up might sound like there's an explosion. And he didn't want the kids to cover their ears and miss what would happen next.
That's so smart. Oh, how true.
It's so smart. And, you know, of course, you know, just makes you love Mr. Rogers more. I feel like he was very like a vanguard of wry parenting in a weird way, you know, like
yeah.
He was so respectful of kids. And so in this article, they actually have these 9 rules for how to speak in Fredish, which I'm not going to go over because it's too much to talk about on the podcast. But you should find this article. It was published June 8th, 2018. So this is old, I guess. It just showed up in my feed recently. But the 9 steps, I'm not going to go over all of them. But basically what it does is it tells you how to get from a phrase that starts as it is dangerous to play in the street. To the end result in Fredish, which is your favorite grown-ups can tell you where it is safe to play. It is important to try to listen to them, and listening is an important part of growing.
I love that.
And it's just so sweet and so just so interesting and such a like really practical set of rules. So like I kind of want to like print it out and put it up like as a poster in our house. But I highly recommend everyone go find it and, you know, just help in the way you communicate with kids. Because it's really important, I think, how we talk to our kids, you know?
Absolutely. Unfortunately, those phrases, at least in my experience, are the first ones that fly out of my mouth, right? Don't go in the street. And if I could pause and translate that in my mind to Fredish, I think that could be very helpful.
It could be really good practice. Also, you know, they were writing a scripted television show that they could redub after the fact, you know?
Yes.
It's a little different than your everyday life of trying to make sure your kid doesn't get run over by a car. But
right. Yes.
When you have the time and you can sort of internalize it and practice, it does seem like a good way to get across mm-hmm. to the kids. So I just loved it. So that's my BFP.
That's so sweet. I love it.
How about you? Do you have a BFP or a BFN for us?
I have a BFP.
Yay.
Underwear.
Yes. Useful. Tell
yeah,
me more.
It is. Okay. Not that I like haven't ever worn it and now I am or anything like that. I've had a journey.
Can you imagine if that's what we found out?
I'm just like, I need to share this with you.
You guys, there's this thing. It's a piece of fabric you put between your pants and your butt. And it's called underwear. It's revolutionizing my life.
You should try it. Target even carries it.
Oh Target? No way.
Mind blown. Okay, so that's not it, obviously.
Okay.
I've just had a long journey with underwears since being pregnant and having kids. And I think I've finally come to a place in my life where I feel really good about my underwear situation.
Okay, so this is about your underwear, not CC's underwear during potty training.
This is about my underwear.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, I want to know because I kind of hate all my underwear, especially being pregnant. Good Lord.
Yes, exactly. I was hating every pair of underwear in my drawer, but I was just like continuing to wear them. And finally, I was like, forget it. I just threw them all away. And I'm like, I've got to find something that works. And the main reason underwear hasn't been working well for me since having a baby is my C-section incision has, I think I've talked about this before, but it has been painful. It's just been a source of problems, like the area above it. It gets mm-hmm. numb still. It gets sore. And one of the things that really bothers it is when like underwear hits a certain place on my belly and just like rubs mm-hmm. it all day long. And I was just wearing these underwear that either landed right there and hurt, or I was like, oh, well, boy shorts are good. They're, you know, very comfortable. And they are. But wearing them under jeans and under pants, it's like so bulky. I feel like I'm wearing boxer shorts or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I endeavored to find a really good pair. And I went through a lot. Like I spent some money trying to find the right cut because there's like bikinis, briefs, thongs, which have been out since I got pregnant. Honestly, they're in my past.
I have never. This is my moment to admit. So I've worn a thong like 3 times in my entire life. And I was like, no, never going to do. I think they were really very popular when we were in our 20s.
Oh, absolutely.
But I just was like, I don't see the point. I don't get this. Mm-hmm. No, thank you.
Yeah, I think the point was like to avoid panty lines showing through your pants. And I don't think that's as big a deal now, you know, especially for me personally that I'm in my 40s. It's not like, oh, my God, what are people thinking?
Yeah, I'm like, if you're looking at my butt, you know, it's look at your own risk at this point. You see a panty line? Who gives a shit?
Exactly. So the boy shorts weren't working. There's like cheeky hipsters, regular hipsters. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, I don't know what's going to work. And especially I'm ordering everything online right now. So I just ordered a bunch and I finally found 2 that work really well for me. Should I share what they are?
Do you think people yes. would like to know? I mean, we're yeah. like all waiting to find out. Help us, Shauna. Help us.
Okay. Now, I have to say, I didn't want to spend a lot of money on underwear. So, you know, people online are like, oh, go to whatever, all these different fancy boutique shops online. I was like, just like, no. And I was ordering individual pairs from Target. And then finally, I was like, they're like $5 a piece. No, I am just going to go for like the cheapo packet of undies is like $10 for 6 pairs. Because if they don't work, I don't feel like I've wasted my money.
Sure.
So, cha-ching, these actually did work. And I'm so excited. So I bought a pack of Auden, A-U-D-E-N. It's from Target. It's their underwear brand. Auden okay. Cotton Bikini. Underwear. The bikini,
okay,
is the key because it falls like above my C-section incision, but it also goes above like where all my sensitivity and like nerve damage okay. still is. So it doesn't rub on anything. It's so awesome.
Oh, that's good.
And they're cotton. So if you like a good cotton underwear, go with that one. And then I got another one I think is like polyesterish. It's Fruit of the Loom seamless bikini. So seamless, okay. You don't have to worry about seams coming through your pants. And they're so comfortable. They're really stretchy. And I have not been uncomfortable in my underwear for a solid 2 weeks.
Oh, you must be like floating on air.
I am. Maybe that's why I've been in such a good mood lately.
I mean, it makes a big difference. It really does.
It does. Yeah. And I just got rid of the other ones. So they're not even in contention, right? It's like you sometimes I get down to the last couple and I'm like, well, I guess I'll wear these. Nope, not anymore. Just all comfies.
Man, I'm inspired. I'm going to wait until after I have this baby and recover a little bit because who knows what my body is going to do after that. But once I'm sort of past that, I'm definitely going to try your suggestions, see if they work on my butt. And then if they don't, just get brand new underwear top to bottom. Well, I mean, bottom only, but you know.
Yes, that sounds like a plan. Well, that is my BFP. And I think that's it for our show. Should we wrap things up?
I think we should.
If you have any today I learns or anything interesting or out of the ordinary you want to share with us, you know, we love to hear that kind of thing. So please reach out. Laura, where can they reach us?
We are on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at BFP Podcast. We also have a website, BigFatPositivePodcast.com. If you want to send us an email and include a voice memo in that email for extra bonus points, you can get us at contact@BigFatPositivePodcast.com. Finally, join our Facebook community group. Just search Big Fat Positive Community. It's a private group, so you have to answer the 2 membership questions to join, but then we will get you straight through to all the really great conversations and super cute baby pictures that we have going on in there.
And what I really want to learn today is what you think of our show. So please head on over to wherever you rate and review podcasts in your podcast app and let us know what you think about BFP. And also please spread the word. Let your friends know about Big Fat Positive. Our show is produced by Laura Bierick, Shauna Maiko, and Steve Yeager. Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.
Bye.